You're listening to Live from Lord North Street, a podcast from the Institute of Economic Affairs. I'm Kate Andrews, news editor at the IEA. Fake news, a favorite term of Donald Trump, was voted 2017's Word of the Year. Indeed, the spread of fake news has been cited as a serious threat to democracy, free debate in the West, with many believing it's made further regulation of social media inevitable. And yet, in a world where social media has allowed anyone to create and disseminate information, there is still little agreement on what it is, how much of a problem it is, and what to do about it. Today, the IEA's chief economist, Julian Jessop, discusses the new media landscape, which has shifted dramatically in recent years, with the growth of hugely influential tech companies like Apple and Google. Julian discusses what, if anything, governments and tech giants should do to address the spread of fake news, and what the future regulatory landscape will look like. If you like what you hear, subscribe to our iTunes channel, IEA Conversations.
Fake news seems to be everybody's favorite term, from the mainstream media to new media to the President of the United States, who just held his fake news awards recently. It really seems now to be a phrase that you use to beat your opponent with. If you don't like something they say, if you don't like a way they've interpreted a statistic, then they're guilty of fake news, and it is a real shutdown. But of course, Julian, we do know that there is a genuine concept of fake news, information that isn't true that's being circulated, and the tech giants, as it were, that are often related to new media, connected to Apple, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, are being accused more and more of helping to facilitate fake news and not doing enough to crack down on it. So can you talk us through the kind of fake news that you are addressing in your paper out this week? And also talk about whether or not it's the problem that everyone makes it out to be.
Well, I think there are probably two characteristics of fake news, and you probably need both for a news story to qualify. One is that the data or the information in it has to be inaccurate. But the second also, I think there has to be a deliberate intention to mislead. There are plenty of examples of inaccurate stories out there, everything from plain bad reporting through to the sort of spoof stories that you might see in Private Eye or The Onion, satire, in other words, that nobody's really expected to believe. I think often fake news is actually a term that's overused to apply to those sorts of things. As far as the deliberate intent to confuse or mislead is concerned, I think that's absolutely the most important thing. And often with the stories that have been identified as fake news, it's not clear to me that there's an understanding that the news story itself is false. Maybe the data are spun too far, maybe they're misinterpreted a little bit, but it's not always obvious to me that the data are fundamentally wrong. But there's a maybe a more general point here. People talk about fake news as if we've only just entered into a new era of something that we haven't seen before. Whereas if we call fake news something else, propaganda, for example, it's clearly been around since the dawn of time. What is different now is that there is perhaps more fake news available than there used to be because of the rise of the internet. But the internet, of course, also provides many more channels for finding out the truth, for correcting fake news. And in practice, although some of us might be obsessed about Twitter and Facebook and so on, most people actually don't get their news from social media, at least not the news they rely on. They rely on other broadcasters, they rely on newspapers, on mainstream TV news, where clearly there are higher standards than on the internet, and where people, generally speaking, can get the truth or at least a good representation of it.
This is something important that you flag up in your paper, because a lot of people believe that if someone reads something and it falls in line with their confirmation bias and they'll just take it to be true, they'll believe it, that will be their source of news. But your paper highlights that people are actually cross-checking their news, they're getting it from different sources, and they are actually getting a more holistic picture than perhaps everyone is suggesting they are at the moment.
Well, it's certainly the case that people who are upset, for example, about the election of President Trump in the US or the vote to leave the European Union in the UK, they very much like to blame fake news for that. I think it gives people a degree of comfort to know that the other side only won by cheating, if you like. And it's perhaps true that those people who voted leave in the UK, for example, might be more likely to believe some of the more extreme stories about migration or about regulation than those who voted to remain. But that in itself isn't evidence that those stories prompted them to change their mind. You know, it may well be that if you are more concerned about migration, for example, on the one hand, you might be more likely to believe a scare story that Turkey is about to join the European Union. But equally, you might have been more likely to vote Leave in any event. The fact that those two things go together doesn't necessarily mean that, that one led to the other. I think also it's a bit naive to suppose that people start from a position of absolute knowledge about these things, and if it weren't for fake news, then everybody would make perfect decisions. I think the reality is that, you know, people are confused, they receive all sorts of messages from all sorts of different sources. And it's not obvious to me that one or two fake news stories will tip the balance in a debate when most people will have made up their minds already.
So from the public policy perspective, a lot of people are calling for more regulation and a crackdown on these tech giants. People believe that the internet is essentially a lawless place. Is this true?
Well, it isn't. I mean, there are all sorts of regulations that govern the behavior of companies, whether they're online or not. I think there are also two further risks here. I mean, one is that in order for the government, for example, to decide what is fake news and what isn't, it has to make some pretty strong decisions. They're actually quite political in nature, which is something that I think most people who believe in democracy would feel uncomfortable with. The second point is, in practice, there may not actually be that much need for the government to intervene because the market itself is coming up with its own solutions. If, for example, you have a news outlet that's persistently pumping out fake news, then those people that don't want to receive those fake news will stop buying that newspaper or subscribing to that website. Alternatively, others will come along with ways of checking that news. For example, any number of fact-checking services that have now developed to allow people to test one view against another to find out what the truth is. And then ultimately, if a company does simply become a channel for pumping out fake news, not only will it lose customers, but also it will end up losing advertisers as well. And advertisers themselves will be much more careful about where they place their advertisements. They don't want to be placed next to fake news or some of the other things on the internet that we might object to, violent images, pornography and so on. So regulation is generally a good thing, but it doesn't have to be regulation by the government. It can be regulation by the market through the customers of these new platforms and also the advertisers on whose revenues they very much depend.
Can you explain to the listeners at home why a company would choose to self-regulate? A lot of people will be thinking, well, you know, if there aren't official rules in place coming from the state, if there's not the threat of getting in trouble, then why would anyone go along with the rules? But clearly companies do. The traditional media market as well as the new media market are essentially governed by self-regulation. They choose to opt into that. Why? Why do they do that?
Well, the key point is that a company in media or technology has to survive not just by selling its product once, but by selling it over and over again. So it requires repeat business from customers. It's not as if you can just print one newspaper, sell it for a day and then disappear. You have to sell your newspaper over and over again. Similarly, when looking at advertising revenue, you need advertisers to continue to buy ads in your newspaper or on your platform. So reputation is extremely important. And if you develop a reputation as somewhere that just pumps out fake news or, to say, pornography or violent images and so on, then you will lose customers. You will lose advertisers. So frankly, it's in your narrow self-interest, your own commercial interest to run the business on the sorts of basis that the wider public would want. There are examples where this doesn't work. I mean, you might, for example, be a state-sponsored news channel where, you know, the government of one country might be trying to undermine the government of the other. But, you know, by and large, those are increasingly easy to spot. But in general, any commercial company that's relying on remaining in business for the long haul needs to protect its reputation. And that means behaving in ways that its customers and its advertisers and other sources of revenue would find acceptable.
Do you think that the way that media is currently regulated needs to change in any way since the growth of these tech giants? We've moved so quickly from traditional media platforms to new media platforms, but also traditional media has adopted many aspects of new media as well. This seems to be the direction that it's all going in. So is there any area that we need to update, that we need to look at, that we need to change in order to deal with this really innovation in the way that we consume the news?
Well, innovation, of course, is in a sense part of the problem. If the government were to try and step in and regulate these new technologies, it would be very much trying to hit a moving target, whereas it may well be that the companies themselves are the best place to come up with various sort of technical solutions to solve the problems that are created. I can think of a few areas where government intervention might be helpful, just to give companies the nudge in the right direction. For example, I think it might be reasonable for a government to require a tech company to come up with a policy for removing unacceptable content within a certain period of time. But exactly, you know, how the tech company did that, I think clearly should be left to the tech company. And I suspect that also over time, these sorts of policies will become industry standard anyway. They wouldn't necessarily have to be arrived at by the government telling people what to do. So I, for example, would be much happier to buy a newspaper or subscribe to an online site if I knew it had acceptable policies for taking down content. I wouldn't necessarily need the government to tell me or the company exactly what it could do in that area. But there are a few things, as I say, the government could do to nudge companies in the right direction.
What about the way that we're taxing these industries? Do we need to look further at changes and rates and the revenue that's coming in from different kinds of media platforms?
Well, it's not obvious to me that the new media companies or multinationals in general are breaking the basic principles of tax law. And the general principle is that, you know, a company should be taxed on production and profits in the country where it makes the goods or services, and taxed on the consumption of those goods and services in the areas where they are sold. So to put that rather dry economics into the case for a practical example, and suppose you had an online auction site that happened to be based in a foreign country, but nonetheless managed to make a lot of revenues in the UK. Now, there might be a case for charging value-added tax on those revenues, but if the bulk of the business is operated from a tech platform somewhere way away, and there's no resources deployed in the UK to deliver that service, it's not obvious to me that the profits of that company should be taxed in the UK. I think they should basically be taxed wherever that company is based. And by and large, that's how the system works. There are clearly some anomalies here. There are some dubious accounting practices. So, for example, companies reducing their tax bill by claiming that they need to pay huge licenses for intellectual property to some obscure offshoot in Luxembourg, whatever else it might be. And I think those sorts of tax practices are wrong and probably do need to be exposed. But the general principle that you should be taxed on production and profits where you make the goods rather than where you sell them, I think is the one that's still largely being met.
Do you think that these tech giants, Amazon, Facebook, Alphabet, do you think they get an unfair rap?
I think they do for a couple of reasons. I mean, first of all, these are new growing industries. So in a sense, it's not surprising that there are some hiccups initially. You know, we're now aware of some of the problems of the rise of the internet, and that's where the calls for government action are coming from. But the companies are learning about this as well. There are problems that we probably never anticipated 10 or 20 years ago because we didn't realise how far the internet would reach into our lives. So I think it's a bit unfair sometimes to blame companies for things that, frankly, nobody has spotted. I think also on some of the specific points, the perception that internet companies get a free ride is overdone. I mean, they don't get a free ride if they publish inappropriate material and so on. They do get hit. They do lose advertisers. They do lose customers. So they may not be vulnerable to exactly the same government intervention as traditional media might be, but they still pay a price. Similarly on taxation, I mean, they do by and large, I believe, pay the taxes that are due. It might be that, you know, they're paying less tax in a given market than a domestic company might do, but then they're not using resources in that market in the same way if they don't have offices or people there. And even where they do have offices and people there, of course, even if they're not paying big corporation tax, they are paying tax on the income of their employees, or their employees are, they're paying tax on buildings and so on. So I think by and large, internet companies do get a bad rap. There are examples of bad behavior there, but they themselves are now doing their best to try and correct those.
Do you think the trend of media moving online is going to continue and accelerate? Or do you think that the role that traditional media plays is still going to be crucial, say, 10 years down the line?
I think it's probably two or three steps forward and then occasionally one step back. I think the advertising model is a good example here. You know, online advertising is supposed to be very clever because it can target specific users. You know, you make sure that the right ad gets in front of the right person. But it's very hard to monitor whether the right person is indeed viewing that ad or whether it's some bot based somewhere in Eastern Europe that's recording the click instead. So I think some advertisers are likely to take advertising back from new media and put it into traditional media where you can actually see the advertisement in front of you and have a better idea who's picking up the newspaper and reading it. I think also we can all think in our private lives of examples where, you know, the latest version of the new technology actually isn't as good as the one before. Clearly, tech companies have a big interest in selling us the new and the latest thing, but sometimes stepping back a bit and having the older version is actually the better thing to have done. So I think you will get a stop-start process, maybe two or three steps forward, but the occasional pullback. And if that pullback encourages tech companies to be more responsive to the demands of the market, their customers, their advertisers, then I think that's no bad thing. And it's not necessarily something that the government has to lead, as I say, that the market may well be able to do most of the work for it.
So there's no clickbaity way to sum up this podcast, because it sounds like, well, fake news is certainly an issue. It's not the issue that it's made out to be across all different kinds of media. And you're not calling for any kind of immediate interference into the market at the moment. You think that the self-regulation that traditional media and new media use has been working pretty well and will continue to do so even in the age of digital innovation.
Well, I think that's right. Interestingly, it's often the authoritarian regimes where the problem of fake news is the biggest, because there isn't the market forces of competition. So if you look at some of the governments around the world with poor records on human rights and so on, I can pretty much guarantee that they've got a state monopoly of information. And it's very difficult for people to find out the alternative facts, the truth, if you like, about what's really going on. Although the market may well lead to more sources of fake news and other forms of misinformation, it also provides the channel for people to find out the truth. And if people are willing to look hard enough, the truth is still out there.
You can download Julian's paper, Supervising the Tech Giants, from our website at iea.org.uk.